This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi,
my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Richard Banfield, Master of Wine. How are you, Richard?
I am fine, thanks, Chris. Good to see you.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about the Sustainable Wine Roundtable, which is an organisation you've been part of for a while now. But do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself, Richard?
Okay. been in the wine business longer than I care to think, probably over 40 years straight from university. Initially started in retail, which I still think is a fabulous way to start in the wine business if you're thinking of it as a career. And then went into distribution for an Australian business for 10 years or so. And I've been self-employed for over 20 years now, much to my amazement, but also to my pleasure. I very much enjoy being self-employed. I've got a number of different regular clients. Lidl is probably the client I'm best known for, but I also work with Albert Bichot in Burgundy, Chateau Brown in Bordeaux, Santa Rita in Chile and Argentina, and one or two other companies, and I do quite a lot of talks and that sort of thing as well. I'm very lucky. I can pick and choose what I want to do, and I keep busy.
We had you on the show quite a few years ago. In fact, we're recording this in your lovely house here in, well, it's not Westland, it's Maidenhead.
Maidenhead.
Yep. And I actually remember coming over here probably about 10 years ago, and we interviewed you for Lidl. And finding out about what you were doing with Lidl back then. But since then, you've moved and you've done some work with the Sustainable Wine Roundtable. Do you want to tell us what it is?
So it is, so the roundtable format, it's a formula that has worked quite well in other product sectors, like palm oil, tea, coffee, fisheries, where you bring together all players or all major players in the value chain to thrash out some solutions that will help that industry become more sustainable. And that nothing like that has existed for wine as far as we're aware. And three or four of us a few years ago when we were chatting about this, we realized that there's tremendous work being done all over the world. The wine world, in terms of sustainability, lots of producers are doing great work. They genuinely respect the environment. They're working responsibly. And there's lots of certification programs all over the world as well, saying this wine is sustainably produced. But because there's so many of them, and very typically of the wine business, it's very fragmented, they effectively dilute each other's effect. And so we believe that it's still pretty difficult for the consumer to recognize a sustainably produced bottle of wine. Also, all these sustainability schemes, or most of them, they're all about the producer, producing more sustainably. But sustainability in wine is about much more than just the production. It's about the packaging. It's about the transport. It's about human rights. It's about economic sustainability. How can we make the wine business more profitable than it currently is? So we're taking a much more holistic view. It's a round table. It brings together, as I say, all parts of the value chain. So some of our members are producers, but by no means all. In fact, a minority are producers. We've got members who are major retailers around the world. We've got logistics companies. We've got glass manufacturers. We've got cork manufacturers. We've got other standards organizations like ISO. We've got Fair Trade. And we also partner with other associations, not dissimilar to our own, like International Wineries for Climate Action, the Porto Protocol. We're closely in touch with the OIV and FIVS. We're trying to bring together all these voices around the table to try and bring about some action to bring about change and make a sustainable wine more easily identifiable.
When did it all start?
Started probably about 5 years ago in discussions at 67 Pall Mall, where most of my discussions seem to kick off these days, with a chap called Toby Webb, who has a very successful business involved in sustainability in other product categories called Innovation Forum. He's a wine lover, and we agreed that it would be pretty cool if we could try to do something similar in wine. And we were just very conscious of the fact that so much of it was production driven at the moment, and we needed to try and come up with a format that would bring all players in wine's value chain together. And the great thing about a round table as well is that it can bring people together who wouldn't normally talk to each other. So you wouldn't normally find major supermarkets and retailers sitting together to talk about these things. They might even be accused of being a cartel if they did so. Under the auspices of a round table, we can bring them together. And we can bring them together with glass manufacturers, for instance, to talk about these things. And amazingly, you know, there's far less interaction between these different parts of the value chain than you might think. And if you actually bring them around a table, we can bring about action that much more quickly.
Okay. I must admit, it flew under my radar for a few years. I only really sort of noticed you guys about a year ago when you were talking about your lightweight bottling accord.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be one of the big things. But you mentioned that with regards to packaging, we were talking earlier, you talked about bottle lightweight and you talked about capsules. You even talked about logistics really as being sort of key elements to that packaging. Just before we talk about the bottle lightweighting, just quickly, capsules. What's the problem with capsules?
Do we need them? I think that the thing is, we've got...
Just so listeners know, capsules are the things you put over the
capsules,
cork.
Absolutely, the capsules you put over a cork. I mean, the reason historically the wine business uses capsules, as far as I'm aware, is because in the old days, in a country like Britain, a lot of wine was stored in cellars. And the capsules were there to protect the cork from damp and, I don't know, anything else that might have been in the weevils or whatever else might have been in the cellar. But that's not the way wine's consumed these days. You know, 99% of wine isn't stored in a cellar. It's bought from a supermarket probably, and it's consumed within a week or two. Do we really need capsules? I think as a society, we've got used to the thinking that recycling is good. No. Recycling is the best of the the best option if you've already bought something.
Yeah.
The best option is removing anything that's unnecessary in the first place. Yeah. So basically, you're eliminating the waste.
I always think it's reduce first, reuse, and then recycle.
Absolutely right. But that's not been the narrative for the last 20 years. And I think we have to get out of the mindset that recycling is good. And we have to keep asking the question, do I really need to buy that part of the packaging? Is it necessary? And that's why, you know, we're seeing these shops springing up that are selling where you take in your own containers for liquids, for nuts, for cereals, all that sort of thing. You take in your own containers so you don't have to pay for the cardboard, the wrappers and all the rest of it, which makes perfect sense to me. And if I'm honest, I think we will see more of that in wine as well. We're beginning to see it already where there are more shops where you take in your own bottle and you refill it from a tank in a shop. And I suspect we'll see more of that in the future.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk a wee bit about the lightweight, what is it called, lightweight bottle accord?
Lightweight bottle accord, yes. So this was the first, I'm glad you noticed it. If I'm honest, I don't think we did a huge amount to blow our own trumpet in the early days. Remember, we're a membership organisation. For some time, we couldn't afford to employ anybody. It's only through gaining more members that we've been able to do so now. And we're able, if you want, or we've got the time to make a little bit more noise. So we were very much under the radar for some time. We fully accept that. But with the bottle weight accord, that did give us, I suppose what I liked about that and what pleased us about that is that it showed that as a round table, we're not just about discussion. We're about action. We can actually bring about tangible actions where the wine trade commits to making a change that will save significant amounts of save the industry significant carbon emissions. So the bottle weight accord came about because we brought together several retailers from around the world, and as a result of researching and informing themselves of all the data available. Because there are lots of concerns about lightweighting of bottles. Will the customer accept it? Can bottling lines handle lighter weight bottles? Are more bottles going to be lost in transit? All this sort of thing. We know, will corks fit them? So there's lots of concerns. So all of that was addressed by the working group. And as a result of that, that working group, those retailers, agreed to reduce their the weight of the average bottles in their stores by 25% before the end of 2026. And between those retailers and other retailers who've joined the accord since, that's going to be around a billion bottles, we think, of wine that will benefit from lighter weight bottles. And I don't know in terms of tons the saving in carbon emissions, but it's significant. Yeah. We think those producers who use those lighter weight bottles, they will reduce their carbon emissions by 15%.
Oh, not 25%. I would have thought you take 25% of weight out, that'd be...
No, because they've got some of their carbon emissions and not the bottle.
Fixed, yeah.
Their electricity, power, various other things. But their overall carbon emissions could be reduced by up to 15% with this one relatively straightforward change.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to talk to Peter Stanbury and we'll probably delve into this in quite a bit of detail.
He's the one who's been chairing the group and is, from a standing start, he is now unbelievably well informed. He is probably a world authority on bottle weight now and what is possible with the glass bottle.
Excellent. I'm a bit concerned that you're solving the wrong problem because all you're going to do is you're going to take out some carbon, but you're still going to have quite a large bit of carbon left in the bottle. And maybe the solution should be to move away from the fuel source being gas for making bottles to move to either electric, which has got some issues, but or possibly hydrogen as well.
Yep.
Which hydrogen has some real advantages in terms of the fact that electricity can't be stored, but hydrogen can, and it can be used, you know, you can manage demand with it as well. So why aren't you focusing on that, perhaps?
Why aren't we focusing on it? Because we're not glass manufacturers. And we're really pleased that two of our recent new members are OI, Owens Illinois from the United States, and Verallia Glass, two of the biggest glass manufacturers in the world, have both recently joined the roundtable. We don't feel we're particularly well informed about that sector. They really are.
Verallia's got InCirc, haven't they? Yeah, and they're building a hydrogen base.
Indeed. And so we know that that's underway, but we don't know enough about it, and we don't know what the timescale for that is. I think the point is, as I say, we are trying to bring about action. And some of that's got, we want, you know, the shorter term it is, the better. The more immediate it is, the better. Look, I think we all realize that the glass bottle isn't going to disappear anytime soon. Okay? However wonderful some of the alternative packaging is, and some of it is very practical and, you know, more sustainable, the glass bottle is still going to be around for a few years yet. And I think you're right. So there are two ways we can approach it. We can make the manufacturing process itself more carbon efficient, which is what you're talking about with hydrogen power and the rest. But that's outside our control. All we can do is help our members and the glass manufacturers realize that, yes, that is very much the way to go. In the meantime, that's going to take time. And in the meantime, there are going to be plenty of glass manufacturers who aren't going to be hydrogen powered for several years yet. With the lightweight bottle accord, that's achievable within 2 years. So we even while we're waiting for those longer term improvements to happen using modern technology, there's work that we can do. There's still things we can do to improve things, improve wine's carbon footprint in the short term. And that's why I think the lightweight accord is super important.
The other thing you guys look at is labor standards. Now, there's a lot of certifying bodies out there. You've got Fair Trade as well. So you've got organic guys, biodynamic, sustainable wine, regenerative viticulture. But Fair Trade's the only one I'm aware of where they really focus on labor standards. Is there any others? Or why are you looking at labor standards? Because it's not, is it really sustainable labor standards?
I'd say it's an absolutely critical part of sustainability. If you look at what happened in Champagne last year, six workers died through the heat. Now, if that happens every year, what do you think Champagne's reputation is going to be like in 5 years' time? No, you can't run a business like that. We have to pay far more attention to labour standards. Look, I think the reason why we feel it's important, we're approaching sustainability in its broader sense. And you know the three pillars, the environmental, the social, the economic. Up till now, the wine business has focused very much on the environmental. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's great. But the environmental impact is, it's only one part of being a sustainable business. And that's why we're raising awareness, and we want to bring more focus on labour standards, the social welfare of wine businesses as well, because we do think that is what's going to make them more sustainable in the long term. So when we're looking at these sustainability programmes around the world, you're absolutely right. Some of them don't have a sort of social welfare policy in them at the moment. We'd like to think that in most parts of the world, they probably should. There's no reason why they shouldn't, particularly as the work's been done. You know, the sort of basic requirements of a social welfare policy are well documented. We feel that they should be part of the sustainability programs.
It makes you wonder about the certification bodies. Is it that you see that the certification bodies, say an organic certifier, should incorporate labour standards into their certification process, or should it be that someone who has a particular organic certification needs to also have a social policy certification or a vineyard input certificate? Yeah,
they're very much two separate things, in my view. Organics, I'm going to get into trouble whatever I say here. Don't get me wrong. I think that organics is a very worthy aim. There's no question, and there's no question that the attention that's been paid to organic foods and other products over the last 20 years has been very beneficial in terms of helping producers recognize the damage done by chemicals and reducing their use in agriculture and other areas. So the organic movement has definitely been helpful. But in some ways, in terms of overall sustainability, it's a bit of a red herring, mainly because in many parts of the world, organic isn't particularly sustainable. If you speak to producers in Bordeaux about the last year's weather conditions, organic producers had to go out into their vineyards with their tractors probably four or five times as often as conventional growers because they had to spray more often. That's not sustainable. And they were also spraying with copper, which doesn't metabolize easily in the soil. That's not sustainable either. So organic it's all very well, but it's just one tool. It's one small, relatively small part of sustainability. And I feel this is where I think the sustainability programs, it will be helpful for them to understand this broader view of sustainability, because then they can incorporate in their criteria, not just how the vines are grown, organic or whatever it might be, but also how staff are taken care of. And to my mind, it's logical that the two should be taken side by side. You mentioned earlier some of the inconsistencies that, you can think of organic wines that are bottled in heavy bottles. Well, that doesn't, it's just not joined up thinking. Mm. If you're really trying to do your best for the planet, for the world, and to have a sustainable business, all these things come together. And if you are, if you take spraying, when you're spraying, you may be organic. Are your labourers wearing the right clothing to protect themselves from what they're spraying?
Yeah, yeah.
All these things come into play. They're interjoined. And we're trying to encourage, we hope that we'll be able to encourage the programmes to incorporate all these aspects into what they're up to.
So you didn't really answer my question. Are you looking for producers to have multiple certifications to cover the full range of sustainability, or are you looking for the different certification bodies to expand there?
Say you've got something like, let's take an example, Sustainable Wine GB. Okay, we're talking in England, and so Sustainable Wine GB, who have done a really good job. Now, and they've got a logo that you can see on bottles of English wine for the majority of producers who are signed up to the Sustainable Wine GB program. Now, we don't want those producers to have a Sustainable Wine GB logo for one thing and then something else for human rights and something else for economic sustainability and whatever it is. No, not at all. We would prefer Sustainable Wine GB within their criteria to be including all these aspects. so that the one certification covers it all.
Mm.
That's what we're trying to come round to. And the point is, at the moment, I think the difficulty for the consumer and the producer, you speak to producers in many countries, take France or Italy, producers who want to adhere to a sustainability program, they don't know which one to choose. They've got a big choice.
Yes.
How do they know which one to choose? Because it's not transparent. It's not clear what the differences between them are. And we think that with the global reference standard, which we're going to be, we're working towards at the moment, the whole idea is that these different sustainability programs will adhere to an internationally recognized standard. That way, we believe that we can enable the customer to make a more informed decision, and we think that sustainable wine will be more credible.
Let's talk a little bit about how you guys work, because you mentioned you've got a very large group of supporters and people who are paying membership fees. You've got affiliates, associates, and members, I think, are the three tiers that you have there. And you said that they're from all aspects of the trade, not just production, but also logistics. You said Amarin, you didn't mention Amarin, but they're on your list as well. How can you get them talking together? Because it's also international. You're talking about people from all over the world, Portugal, if it's Amarin. You're a UK-based organisation.
We're UK-based, but we really do want to be seen as an international organisation. And if you look at our membership, it is truly international. And it's very important that we are seen as an international organisation, not a British one.
How do you get everybody together? Because a round table with international people all over the world, it's like carbon miles.
It's not always easy if you've got producers in Europe and Australia or New Zealand who are in the same working group, but it's manageable. Every other business is managing it. We're certainly not, I can assure you, we're not flying people all over the world to attend meetings. That is definitely not what we're trying to do. That would be slightly counter to our objectives. This is the great advantage of Zoom or Teams or whatever it is, that we can bring people together around a call, and we can do it that way. And that's working extremely well. I think, to my mind, it's been one of the great benefits to business over the last 5 years. We've learned how to use that technology effectively to bring together people from different parts of the world. So it doesn't pose a problem.
What is the ultimate goal? You know, if you look back on the Sustainable Wine Roundtable in 10 years' time, what do you go, wow, there we are, that's proof that we did our job well, or maybe we're doing our job well, or what?
It's a really good question, and the trite answer is that, I can say we don't really know. You could argue that it's our members. In fact, you know, that is partly the notion of a round table, is that actually it's the members who drive the objectives. It's not the founders of the round table who drive the objectives. We know more or less where we want to get to. We want to get to a sustainable wine business where wine producers and every link in the value chain is managing their business viably, and also where the consumer can recognize a sustainably produced bottle of wine. Okay, so that's where we want to get to. I suppose in an ideal world, we'll have achieved our objectives when we no longer need to exist. You know, that would be the ideal world. But we're still not sure exactly what that route is going to take. And that is that changes partly because of new information, new data that comes to hand, partly because of new technology. You were talking about hydrogen power and that sort of thing recently, partly because of the use of how new technology is embraced by the business, and what the priorities of the members are, I guess, up to a point. It's very difficult. I don't believe we have a specific goal. I think we have a vision statement, but it is more about the how we're doing things in many ways, the collaboration, the bringing people together, rather than knowing exactly when we're going to have reached that point.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Richard. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's a pleasure. Nice to see you, Chris.